Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Hooray for Hollywood, and that was Doris Day. And greetings. This is the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, and I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. And today on Topically Yours, our focus will be on Hollywood, most specifically women in Hollywood, and particularly women of color and the roles available to them in Hollywood. As America browns down, our question is why there are not more roles that reflect the diversity in America, especially since collectively that diversity represents the majority people in America. Although we are seeing changes like Michael Strayhorn becoming Kelly Ripa's co-host on Regis, but we all know that at one time we would not have seen minorities representing host spots such as that on a national network. So times, they are a-changing. But is that change happening fast enough? Well, I have my guest today, Cece Foster, who I'm going to ask that question to. And Cece Foster is an actress, an author, a businesswoman, and co-owner of Goddess Flower Productions. She is a documentary filmmaker of a film entitled I Heart Hollywood, with the hate crossed out. I Heart Hollywood takes a look behind the scenes at the real-life experiences of working actresses in Hollywood and how they cope with the challenges they face. Cece Foster is a native Chicagoan who holds a BA degree in psychology. She has appeared in independent films, print ads, and commercials. And now she's relocated to Hollywood and has written a book entitled Sunny Rain. She's a wife, a mother, and a humanitarian. Well, she's here, and you're here, And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put you two together, and I'm going to introduce Cece Foster because she's with us, and let us welcome her to the show. How are you, Cece?
I'm good, Deirdre. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to have you aboard.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Well, as I mentioned, you hail from Chicago. Is that where you began your entertainment career?
Yes. Actually, it all started in Chicago, hometown, many, many years ago. I graduated from Chicago State University with a BA in psychology, but I studied theater while at Chicago, and I had received a minor in theater at Chicago State University. So it pretty much all started back with college.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you were in some college plays, or how'd you get the bug in the first place?
You know what? It was just once I got on the stage. Well, while in college, a professor that was there at Chicago State asked me to try out for one of the plays, and I said, you know, sure. You know, I'd always liked the idea of acting. I just didn't know if it was something that was a feasible career. So went ahead, auditioned, got the part, and from there it was magic. I had to find any way to make it work as a career. I was hooked.
Well, tell me a little bit about your background. How did you, in Chicago, we always think of New York or Hollywood as the place for actors to go, but obviously there's work for actors in Chicago. Tell me about that, the industry there.
Well, the industry is a lot different in Chicago than, you know, it is out here in Hollywood. It all started with me basically finding an agent. I knew that if I really wanted to be taken seriously, the first thing was to get, you know, headshots and shop that around to agents out there, and because the agents are the ones who get you the big roles. So it didn't take long for me to get an agent. As a matter of fact, I had like 5 or 6. When you're in a smaller market, you can have as many agents as you want, but in L.A. you can only have 1 commercial agent and 1 theatrical agent. So I used that to my advantage, and I was going out all the time, working all the time. So by the palm being a lot smaller in Chicago, I think it's a great place for actresses to start out because you get your feet wet and you kind of get to learn, okay, so this is how it works. This is what works. This is what doesn't work. And it's all about just having that strong agent who will send you out. But in the meantime, I wasn't sitting back just waiting on them either. There are a lot of trade newspapers and where you can find out who's casting what. And I would send my headshots to them and just say, hey, look, I want to audition for this role. And a lot of times they would call, and that's how it all began with me.
Well, you did some modeling as well, or just
print modeling.
Print modeling.
Yeah.
So you did diversify, and would you suggest that to young actresses or potential actresses that want to know how to get started in the business?
Yes, I definitely would suggest that because it gives you another, you know, trick in your bag, so to speak. Because with this industry, if you're just going to go out there and say, I am only going to, you know, act and I'm only going to do plays, you start to really limit yourself. And for me, being in this business meant I want to experience all of it. And I didn't want to miss out on, like, you know, opportunities that may have been for industrial work or for plays or for commercials. You know, I did it all. So that was probably one of the reasons why I stayed so busy, because I did not limit myself. But all of it to me is a great learning experience. It really pads your resume really well, and it gives you a lot of room to kind of find your niche, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, do you have a musical background? Because is that important, too, in some roles? Because there's a lot of musicals on Broadway.
It is. I cannot sing worth a lick. That's one thing I never trained in because, you know, and that's so, it's typical for African-American women for them to expect you to sing almost because a lot of the plays that are out
and
there,
dance.
They're, and dance, exactly. It's like you have to do it all. But that was one reason why I wouldn't do it, because I didn't want to be that fall into that stereotypical thought process. I was like, I'm going to just do acting. I'm going to do, you know, print work. I'm obviously too short, being 5'2", to do any other type of, you know, modeling, but print is fine for a shorty. So I wanted to, you know, do that. And, yeah, I mean, but it definitely couldn't hurt if you do have those pipes to, you know, develop them. But I just was never born with that kind of talent, so.
Well, what struck you upon arriving in Hollywood that was different from what you experienced in Chicago in terms of pursuing your career?
It was such an eye-opening experience when I first got here because it was nothing like I thought it would be. I had this preconceived notion in my mind that, okay, L.A. will be, you know, it'll be a lot of work everywhere. People will be nicer and more open. No, it was very different. In L.A., almost everybody's an actress. I mean, you'll have a dentist with a SAG card, a bus driver with a SAG card. I mean, it is oversaturated. So with that being said, when everybody's an actor, that means that there are more people going for that one part, you know, where in my, back in Chicago, I was used to being like up against 5-10 people for a part. No, not in L.A. You're up against, you know, 30-40 people that they see for this role, and you're against people who have names already, who've done the television work, who've done, you know, so the industry mm-hmm. already feels familiar with. So it's a different ball game. And that was one of the most, I think that was
disappointing.
Well, it was, I didn't expect it to be as oversaturated. So when I got here, that was very, it was very different for me when I found out just how many actors actually exist right here in this hub.
Did that discourage you, or was it a bit discouraging at that point?
You know, it really was discouraging. At one point, I was just like, wow, did I make the right decision? You know, I was back in Chicago. I was working all the time. It was, the work was coming much more easier. And then come out here, and then, boop, all the work is gone. And it took me just a year to find an agent. It took me almost a year just to find an agent. Whereas when I was in Chicago, like I said, I found an agent very quickly. When my first mail-in, agents were calling me back like, yes, I want to represent you. Come in. It wasn't the case here. And then when I got that agent, she made a point to let me know just how lucky I was to have her call me, because they don't just take headshots. I mailed her a headshot. And it had a cover letter attached to it, and I was just letting her know that I'm new in town and looking for representation. And she let me know she rarely picks headshots out of the mail and calls them in, but it was something about my picture that she really liked, so she called me in. So it was just a lot of luck, and, you know, you just have to keep pushing.
Well, what was your first role? Was it what you expected, or you were just happy to get anything at that point?
Just happy to get anything at that point. I did, like, I did a couple of, like, print ads through them. I go out for commercials here and there, but not nearly as much as I used to go out when I was in Chicago. So that is what made me decide to start producing my own work, because it was, the roles were few and far in between, and I got tired of sitting around and basically waiting on the agent to call me and say, hey, look, go here for this audition, you booked this. It was just, it's too much downtime for me, and I'm a go-getter, I'm very motivated, and I always want to keep, you know, moving forward. So that's how I Heart Hollywood came about, just me and my at the time, she was just a fellow actress, Mashari Bain, that lived in Chicago too, and we were just talking about how frustrated we were with the business. Like, man, it's hard out here. It really is. And we were like, well, what can we do about it? And so that's how I Heart Hollywood came about.
Now, did you audition for certain women to be? But all of them were no, they weren't. There was one or two white women, but most of them were women of color and different ethnic diversity, right?
Yes. We wanted to mix it up and have this perspective being told from women of all colors. So we do have an Indian woman, African-American women, and two Caucasian women, and it's what we found after all of this is despite the color of your skin, despite your background, we all want the same thing. We want to be successful in this business, and it's not any it's still a hard business because Hollywood is like a circle. It's a very elite, small circle, and it's like it's very difficult to penetrate that circle. But once you're in, you're in. But the tough part is like getting in there because it's so oversaturated.
Well, how do you get in?
You know,
are you still
I think
trying to find out that answer, or you know now.
I know that answer, and my belief is you have to keep trying and working hard at it. It's one of those things where most people think there's a such thing as an overnight success, and no, that does not exist. You have to do the same thing over and over, which is I call the Hollywood hustle. It's getting out there. You have to go to these networking events, meet people, tell them what you're doing, you know, constantly audition, and eventually if you do not give up or get sidetracked by, God forbid, drugs or anything crazy like that, then when it's your time, it'll happen for you. The thing is, I think most people get frustrated and they give up too easily because no one likes rejection. I mean, you don't want to be told no, 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 no. It's like you got to have really thick, thick skin.
It seems like really, really thick skin.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they don't particularly make you feel welcome, or do they? I mean, when you get out there, you feel like how do you feel when you're auditioning?
When you get out here, my experience has been you feel alone. Even though there's thousands of actors, they have a lot of, it's that mentality of like crabs in a barrel, right? When you're all kind of the same, we're all actors and we want to get to that next level, but they don't want to see the next actress get that role. They want it. They feel like they're entitled to it. They've been out here longer. They have more connections. It's their time. So even though there's a lot of actors out here, you still feel the sense of being alone, kind of, competition.
So do you feel that you really have friends, especially if they're all in competition with you?
I think I have very few friends, maybe one or two, and I have those two particular women are my good friends because we don't think of it as like this is we're competing against each other. We're different types. We both agree that what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. So it's kind of like, hey, if it happens for her, I'm happy for her. If it happens for me, great. It's out of my hands. I'm going to come there, and I'm going to do the best audition I could do. But it's so many factors that go into that that I would have nothing to do with, like I'm too short, I'm too dark, I'm too light, I speak too proper. You know, it's so many things that the actress has nothing to do with that it's out of your hands. And it would be silly to, you know, be mad at your friend for getting something. So.
Well, that's something I saw when I observed your picture. I mean, I saw a snippet of it where the ladies were talking about the casting system, the casting directors, and what they're looking for. And oftentimes they look at you and decide that you're something that you're not.
Absolutely.
Well, tell me about that, because there's one woman that mentioned something about being Mexican, and the casting director thought she was Mexican.
Yes, Rachel. Yeah, casting directors, I mean, they're human just like anybody else, and they have these preconceived notions just by seeing a person. They think they can read a person. And some of them are right, sometimes they're wrong. But it's just one of them things that it's just one of those things that exists that, you know, I haven't found a way to get around in this business. It's just, you know, it is what it is. When you go in and you're reading and they think, they call you in because of a picture. So they're hoping that you could live up to that character based off of that picture. So it's kind of like, don't do anything to change your look. You got to kind of look like the picture because that's the reason why they're calling you in. They're calling you in because they want a long-haired African-American woman of this age. So if you go and you cut all your hair off, you dye it, you get a mohawk, you're not that character anymore. Despite the fact that there's hair and makeup on the set and they can change you back to how they want you to look, they don't want to see that, though. So it's just weird.
So, but the way the script is written, are the characters described, or is it that they just get an idea of, okay, we think we want this character to look like that, or the book or the script calls for that particular look?
Yeah, well, the casting director goes through the script, and they do what they call a character breakdown, which is just finding out all the characters and kind of describing them. This is a 40-year-old, you know, woman with blah, blah, blah. And then they do this for every character. And then they send these breakdowns out to agents. So then the agents pick their best people that fit that description based on their picture and get them auditions. You know, call the casting director up and say, hey, I got the best, you know, Cece Foster would be a great, you know, leading lady for this. She looks like this and she weighs this amount. Let her read for it. And then that's how you get in and get your audition.
Wow. So what made you decide, okay, I've gone through this system and it's not working? Because are there enough roles for women of color or what? Is it more difficult for women of color than white women, or it's all the same?
I think it's harder. You know, it's hard for me to speak from their perspective because I'm not, you know, I'm a black woman. So what I see is it's harder for us because there are less roles. I mean, look at TV, look around you. You just don't see that many roles of substance, I should say. I'm not talking about passenger number one or, you know, waitress number two, one of those one-liners. I'm talking about a real meaty
leading role.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You don't see that much. So why you don't see that much? Because I'll tell you why. Hollywood is ran by white men who think they know what America wants to see. And they don't think black women is what America wants to see, or the world wants to see in a leading role. I even heard somewhere, I went to a mixer networking thing where he was saying that the reason why you see a lot of, you know, the when you see Will Smith and his love interest is never a black woman, because they don't want to market his movies as a black movie. He's already black, so if you move in the black wife and the two black kids, then quote unquote we have a black movie, and that's a hard sell in Hollywood. So they always give him another race wife. So that it's not, it doesn't have to be sold as a black movie. You know,
wow.
There's very few actors that have made it past that threshold to be in.
A labeled black movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that why they always put Jennifer Lopez maybe with a white guy?
Yes. Same thing. They don't want the movie to be like a Latin movie. They think it's more widespread if it's, you know, you have a white man in it. It's more acceptable. More people will come out to support it. So, unfortunately,
but is this true by the audience that itself? I mean, don't black people go to movies to support a movie? Period.
We absolutely do. I mean, look at Red Tail. We went out to see that, and, I mean, it had an all-black cast, and it was I mean, I guess he couldn't even get the thing made. From what I hear, he had to put
his
own money.
Pay for it on. Yeah, exactly. That's what I hear.
Wow.
So there's still in Hollywood a sort of a racist thing going on. That's the bottom line, right?
Absolutely. I would agree. Yeah, and the way we change that, in my opinion, is we have to have more African-American decision-makers. See, the issue I have with this whole industry is everybody seems to want to be in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Why not get behind it, produce it? That's where the decisions are made as a producer. You make the decision who's in it, who's in and who's out. You know, but everybody seemed to want to be in front of it, which you have no control over anything, and you're just, you know, there to do your role and go
home.
You're
an employee.
Exactly, you're an employee. So we need more black decision makers in Hollywood. That's what we need. And then little by little, we'll start to see more meaty roles for us.
And is there room for independent filmmakers, small budget films?
Definitely room for that now. There's definitely room for that now. I mean, look at right now, the internet has like leveled the playing field. It doesn't take millions of dollars anymore to make a great film. Okay, now they have cameras out here, these digital cameras you can get for a couple thousand bucks, $2,000. Make a great short film, get distribution. People will support it if it has enough, you know, buzz behind it, and it's good work. I do believe it'll find its audience in due time.
Oh, that's the other question. Distribution. Is that a problem?
That's a big problem. And it's a big problem because the first thing, when we were shopping our Heart Hollywood around, which we still are shopping it around, as I said too, George Lucas couldn't even get his distributor. He had to do it himself because of the nature of the film. So that's, you know, that's scary to think that somebody at that level would have
exactly,
to go through.
Exactly, because he's at
that,
the big
you know, it's
top.
Really scary.
Yeah. He's big time.
So with us,
when you think of George Lucas, you think of big time.
Absolutely. He's been in the game for many years, many connections. He should be able to walk into any meeting and say, look, this is how it's going to go. I'm going to do this movie. You're going to distribute it. He should have that kind of power, you would think, but that just shows you the, you know, how this industry works, unfortunately.
It sounds like a good old boys club.
So with us, with iHeart Hollywood, we have a small budget. We have no-name actresses. We're first-time producers. Those are three big strikes. But we haven't let that stop us from getting it out there ourselves because, as I said, the internet now, you can put your movie up there, have people rent it and purchase it. And so far, we've been doing pretty good. I would like to see it distributed mainstream. So, I mean, we're still working on that now, but it's hard because the first thing they ask you is, hey, who's the star in there? Who's starring in it? And if you don't have a name that's recognizable to them, it's like, next.
But now, like, what was that movie where it was an Indian movie about the kid winning the lottery?
Is it Bollywood or?
It wasn't Bollywood. It was about this young man. You go through his life, all the experiences he had. It was a game show, and then he wins the million.
I know what you're talking about.
Can't think of the name of it right now. But nobody there was a name.
No.
Nope. That was a pretty popular movie.
It was. Again, that goes back to the connections that you have, right? If you know the right people, then this will be a breeze for you, navigating this whole intricate Hollywood stuff. It'll be a breeze for you because, I mean, in life, what do? We look out for our friends, right? We look out for our buddies.
Exactly.
And right. So if you could luck up on knowing somebody with a little pull, then you're okay. But
well, even if you have your community that everybody gives $5 to put the movie up.
Yeah, that too.
And that might have been more of what happened with him, with them.
Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, Slumdog Millionaire.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
It was on the tip of my tongue. I was like, I got to get the name because I know what she's talking about.
That's it, Slumdog Millionaire.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had a little money behind that. It wasn't like a really broke film. You know, it wasn't studio either. But, yeah. And the director was Danny. I'm losing it. They had a lot of buzz behind this thing. And to me, that's like half the battle.
The battle?
If you can get that publicist that can get you into mainstream papers, media, and just get people talking about your movie, you're way ahead of so many. Because that's what this industry is about, buzz. Says buzz around something, and Hollywood thinks it's cool, and then they're going to do what they can to get a piece of that money, so they'll put it out because it seems relevant to them, you know?
Exactly. But that's the other thing. Do you go into the community and say to the people, look, this movie is being put out by a black woman and like the black community to support it, at least everybody send $5 or something to help get this movie made or distributed or... Do you
we
even approach?
Haven't tried...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We haven't tried that approach for I Heart Hollywood yet. My new short film that I'm doing, that it'll be, it's called crowdfunding, when you just kind of ask the community to help you fund this. You don't have to go in your pocket. So my new one, I will be doing that. And, I mean, we'll see what happens. But for I Heart Hollywood, we were just both two passionate women who wanted to tell this story. So we said we're going to reach in our own bank account and just make it happen. And that's how that happened.
Well, how long is it, by the way?
It's an hour and a half.
Where can people, I know it's on, is it on YouTube, or where can people go and see it?
Amazon. They could purchase the DVD, or they could download it, or they could rent it off of Amazon. There.
Okay. And folks who's listening, that's I Heart Hollywood. And then you have I Hate Hollywood or something, right? But you cross out the hate and put a heart over it.
That symbolizes how you feel about this business. You love it one day, you hate it the next, but you can't seem to let it go.
Well, let me ask you to just step away from that for a moment. Mm-hmm. You are also an author. Did you write your book, Sunny Rain, before or during trying to get into the business? Or tell me about that.
Oh, well, Sunny Rain was first. I started out with Sunny Rain and getting that promoted, and then kind of moved on to I Heart Hollywood, getting that up and running.
And what is Sunny Rain about?
Sunny Rain is that, it's like Chick Lit. It's about three Chicago social workers who, you know, they have their ups and downs with life. Monica, Natalie, and Leslie. It's a little bit on the erotic side. We call it a sexy drama. This is not erotica, but it is kind of a little hot. It's social workers. Yeah, we'll call it that.
And that's what people like.
Yeah, it's been doing really good. It's made a couple of lists on Amazon, so I'm proud of Sunny Rain. I call Sunny Rain, this is like my firstborn child. No matter what, this is like the first project for me.
Well, tell me about your production company. You're in partnership with your husband?
Yes. My husband, Kevin Foster, he's great. He's the one that came up with the whole idea about putting, you know, the book out ourselves, because Kevin always tries to find a way to make extra money. And he's like, look, we can do this ourselves. This is easy. Why should you give, you know, some publication company, you know, 89% when you wrote it. Let's do it ourselves. So I said, okay, fine. He put everything together. He picked out, you know, the graphic artist and all of that. And it was a really, really great experience during Sunny Rain with him. And then we moved on after Sunny Rain was completed. We moved on to doing a show about books and book clubs called Dig Into Books. It's a web show. So far we have 3 episodes. We go around and we interview book clubs all around from city to city and just kind of find out, you know, what book they're reviewing. Check in with them and find out why they think they're one of the greatest book clubs around. And it's fun, it's educational, and it's very different from anything I've done, because that was my first, like, hosting since I host this show. First hosting gig. I didn't think I was a host. But when he pitched it to me, my husband pitched it to me, I was like, sure, let's do it and see what happens. And so far, it's been great. So.
Well, are people reading? Because when we look at our nation, it seems like they're not. But are they?
I don't think they're reading as much. I think with the invention of, you know, all of these electronical devices that we have here, they're getting more and more distracted because, I mean, if you look around, bookstores are becoming non-existent.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
You mean like the Kindle when you say
why,
the electrical devices? You mean the Kindles? Or?
And I just think the internet is getting more and more popular, like the YouTube channels, and everybody like has a shorter attention span now. So it's like,
no,
okay, cool, let's pop on the internet, let's watch a 5-minute movie, and then that's our entertainment. But a book is like, you know, this is a commitment to sit here and, you know, read this. This is a commitment. You're going to always have that small base audience, but I think it's getting smaller and smaller. And that's why I wanted to do the show, Digging the Books, to kind of, that's our last line, keeping literature alive, kind of keep it going.
Absolutely, because there's nothing like reading a book, because that's really your mind there. You know,
right.
Your mind gets involved in it's more exciting to me than just looking at something.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as you say, people are not investing their minds too much these days. It's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, and it starts at home, and these kids now, like I have 2 kids, we have 2 kids, and we push books on them. We have bookshelves with many, many books. But it's like these kids nowadays, they're just interested in, like, my daughter, like right now, she's on the other computer, and she's just going away watching her YouTube videos. It's like they're overconsumed with this internet now. Books are not, you know, what they do now. So it's almost like for me, I have to really twist her arm and kind of make her. It's not something that she wants to do, but I have to make her read. Now my youngest one, who's 8, she's more like me. She loves to read. I don't have to push her. She'll go, she'll get a book, and she'll sit down and read it, no problem. But times are changing.
Well, do you work with teenagers? Or I thought I read somewhere that you might be. Is that part of the book project?
No. Yeah, I do work with teenagers who are emotionally disturbed. Because foster care back in Chicago, before I got into all the acting thing, I got my degree in psychology, and I was working with foster care youth who basically, you know, felt abandoned. So I always felt like connected to that that population, and as a matter of fact, I'm in the process of developing a TV pilot about foster care youth with my husband. We're in early stages, finishing up, you know, writing the script, but it's going to be like a gritty drama surrounding social workers and kind of, you know, what they go through and what they see every day. It's really quite heartbreaking.
Well, you should talk to Victoria Rowell. I guess she's out there in Hollywood. The actress that used to be on the soap operas, because she is a foster kid.
She has foster kids? Wow.
She is one. She was one. And she could tell you the whole, she had five foster moms.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, she could really tell you a lot about the whole thing with foster families and so forth. But she was lucky because every one of her foster mothers encouraged her to dance and get involved. That's how she got involved in show business.
Mm-hmm.
I think she did ballet.
Well, she is one of the lucky few because a lot of the foster care kids, they wind up just in the streets, in jail. It's really sad.
Well, don't they have to be out of foster care at age 18? The door opens and slams once they reach a certain age, don't they? Doesn't it?
Yeah, because after that, it's like they're an adult, they're on their own, but a lot of them still aren't prepared to, you know, live on their own. But here, California, I'm learning that they try to keep them to 21, but that's if they're doing something productive, okay? They have to be, like, school, you know, going to college or work, and they may be able to keep them open till like, they're 21. But after that, you know, that's it.
Well, let me ask you just a moment again about your Goddess Flower Productions. Do you invite female filmmakers in particular to bring their films under the umbrella of Goddess Flower Productions or no?
Oh, Flower Goddess, we haven't done that yet because we're so busy with, you know, getting our, trying to get our own distribution deal. Maybe that's something that I'd be interested in, like, down the line once I can get with a distributor who is reputable. Because a lot of distributors out there, you have to watch them. They will take the rights to your film, and you will not see a dime, okay? They're known
really?
For that. It's a snake industry, so you have to be careful. So I wouldn't feel comfortable bringing anybody else under us until I know we got a distributor and this company is reputable and good, and they will actually pay you. So,
well, how do you protect yourself against that onslaught?
Ooh, it's hard because, like us, we work really close with our attorney, and before, you know, signing anything, we're, like, always picking his brain and let him review everything. But he's in the business, too. He's a producer as well. So he knows the game, and he warns us all the time about how, you know, you can get caught up in some things and how they word things in contracts that you got to watch out for. But honestly, I don't know a way to protect yourself from it because it's a gamble, and I think all you can do is kind of go with your gut. If you feel like after meeting these people you can trust them and you sign on a dotted line, hopefully all will turn out well and they'll cut you a check, but maybe not, and then you don't deal with them anymore. So it's really a gamble, but I don't know.
Oh, that's sad. Well, tell me, what is Cali Connect?
Oh, that's a coalition of, like, authors here in California. We would get together and kind of do events and promote each other, go out and sell books. It's a fun group of people to work with and network with.
Oh, okay. Well, is there anything I haven't asked you that I've been remiss and you'd want to discuss?
Maybe my upcoming project that I have. Mm-hmm. I'm real excited about it. It's a short film, and it's called Beyond Merit. We're going to be working with, this is the first time with me working with this director. His name is Ruben Johnson, and I've seen his work and just fell in love with his work the first time. So he's going to direct it. My husband, Kevin Foster, is going to co-produce it. And we've got a couple of name actresses looking at the script. And if all goes well, she'll be able to do it. It's a scheduling thing. We'll have to see if we could, you know, work it out because we're slated to go in October, to film in October. But this story is powerful. It's about it's based on a true story, a woman that, her name is Linda Merritt, and she battled drugs and has.
I'm sorry, she does what?
She battled drugs. Not anymore. She battled drugs.
Oh, she battled
and
drugs.
Lost. Mm-hmm. Just had one of those lives where she had so much drama and she had one of those heavy lives. And the good thing about her life is she came through and is still surviving after losing one of her sons to an accidental suicide. Mm-hmm. She made a vow to change her life for the better, hasn't taken drugs in 20 years.
Wow.
And she went back to school, got her master's degree, and she's like, she counsels other parents now who have lost children.
Wow.
So she's a remarkable woman, turned her life around completely. And I wanted to, after we had a conversation, because she bought Sunny Rain, and we started talking about more personal things that we had both been through. And she opened up to me about what she had went through with, you know, using drugs and heavy drugs, crack cocaine, and being addicted to that, losing her kids. Yeah, losing her kids to foster care, having a fight to get them back, and then coming out of that with, okay, I'm going to stop using drugs, went back to school, got her degree, and feels like, you know, she was sent, she was really placed on this earth to help others. And in her way of, I mean, she's a remarkable woman. So I'm just
Don't you think sometimes it's kind of weird how the divine works, that sometimes the most tragic things that happen to you in life and suddenly everything is turned around and you become the opposite of what you were and are able to help others, and it's almost like you were meant to go through that so that it's so personal to you and you understand it so well that you can help others that are going through it because you know what they're going through.
Absolutely. I do. Yep.
Well, Cece, it sounds like you've got some very interesting films. That was a documentary film, I assume, a story of this late life.
Yes, the I Heart Hollywood documentary. The Beyond Merit is going to be a short film. It's about 18 minutes long.
Okay. Well, sounds interesting.
It is. So excited.
Well, we've gotten to the end of our 45 minutes and went over a little bit, but I wanted to hear what you had to say. And it's delightful to have you on the show and to talk about all the wonderful things you're doing in your humanitarian pursuits, your book, your two films. Oh, and are you starring in your latest film? Are you have a role in it at all?
No, I'm not going to be in it. I think producing is, like, hard enough. I just want to, like, focus on making sure everything turns out right.
Well, are you finding yourself enjoying the producing part more than the acting, or is just...
I am. I really am. Yeah. The producing feels a side of me that creative side that lets me put the pieces together, and I really enjoy that. Instead of being just told, okay, come to the set at this time, do your lines, and go home, I'm, like, involved from start to finish.
And it's yours.
And it's my baby.
Yeah. So that's the best part of all. In the end, you're doing something that you enjoy, and it's yours.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank you, Cece Foster, for coming on the show and telling us, because I know there's a lot of young people that want to know how to go to Hollywood and get started, and at least you let them know it's not what you think. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me here, Jeff.
It's my pleasure. And this is the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul. We were talking to Cece Foster, and her I Heart Hollywood can be obtained on Amazon, you say?
Yes.
And your book?
And my book. Mm-hmm.
And her book, Sunny Rain.
So go out there and buy it and support it so that she can put out more productions for us in the future. And this is Deirdre Schuler, and I want to thank my audience for making my topic topically yours. You know what? We're going to end the show with Doris Day singing, "You Ought to Be in Pictures."
You, you, and you, and you
thank
ought
you,
to be in pictures. You're wonderful to see. You ought to be in pictures. Oh, what a hit you would be. Your voice would thrill a nation. Your face would be adored. You'd make a great sensation with wealth and fame, your reward. And if you should kiss the way you kiss when we are all alone, you'd make every girl and man a fan worshipping at your throne.
Foster, and this is the Blake Radio Network.